And welcome back to the Odd Man Rush, our NHL podcast here at CBSSports.com. This is Greg Simluka, and once again, I'm joined by Wes Goldstein and Aaron Brown. How's everybody doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Happy Columbus Day. I'm doing well.
Columbus Day. Come on. Thanksgiving Day. Thanksgiving Day.
Should we honor it?
Well, you know what? I decided to go back to my Italian heritage.
All right. And, okay. And maybe we should honor the Blue Jackets then today.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Are they one of the 12?
I believe they do have a game today.
I'm not sure. I just know I think the Avs and Bruins play at 1.
So. Yeah, Avs and Bruins play at 1. Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. Day hockey. We'll be very happy. In the newsroom here at CBSSports.com as there are day sports. All right, so let's kick off the show. We want to talk about some significant injuries to some significant players and how it's going to affect their team. So we mentioned briefly last week, we talked about the Markov injury and a little bit on Eric Cole, but we've got Johan Franzén joining and Daniel Sedin also with injuries. So let's kind of take a look at these injuries and see what kind of impact it's going to have on the teams they play for. Wes?
Well, I think you look at the last two you mentioned, Sedin and Johan Franzén. That's going to be critical. You know, you look at especially Detroit right now, losing Franzén after losing so much offense in the offseason to free agency. They lost Hossa, they lost Hudler, they lost Samuelson, Capecchi as well. Franzen's a big part of that offense. And he's kind of a late bloomer in a lot of people's eyes, but he's really become a very effective guy in the playoffs, and he's a guy in front of the net. He scores a lot of goals.
Sure.
That I think that's going to hurt them. I think Detroit has a lot of challenges in general this season because the age, they lost a lot of key players. They're going to have a lot of players in the Olympics. It's a tight schedule. I think all these factors, it's going to be real tough for Detroit to make up all these losses. They're still a good team, obviously, and they have people to fill in. But Justin Abdelkader, who was kind of a breakout player to some extent in the playoffs last year, he hasn't really lived up to that yet this season. Darren Helm is hurt. So I think it's going to hurt the Red Wings moving forward. And as far as Sedin goes, that's a big injury because, let's face it, there's hardly any two players in the NHL that have better chemistry than Sedin and his brother Henrik. And losing that part of the offense for Vancouver is critical. I mean, those two guys are the driving forces. They already are without Pavel Dimitra, whose rehab is not going quite as well as everybody thought.
Sure.
He's not back in the lineup. So you're talking about losing two guys who are basically 70 to 80 point players, missing them for several weeks, I think is going to hurt that team.
Yeah, and one thing that we talked about, and we were always prefacing it by saying, hey, it's only a couple games in the season, it's not really panic time yet, and it still isn't. Mm-hmm. But when you take a look at the fact that they didn't have good starts, and now you've got these significant injuries happening, it gets even harder to climb back up that hill.
Well, not only that, I mean, the thing is this, the NHL, it's a tighter schedule, so your points obviously are as important at this point in the year as they are at the end of the year, but the teams tend to move in packs after Thanksgiving. You know, this is really the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season is generally where teams kind of set the tone for themselves for the rest of the year. And losing players at this point and having them out of the lineup at a critical point, I think, is going to be a factor playing down the road.
But the one godsend this year, as opposed to other years, that might be a help is that teams who set the tone early now may be affected by the Olympics down the stretch. And when it comes to those March and April games where they're cramming so many games where they're playing almost every other night, maybe that's where some of those teams lose ground and others are able to make it up. For the Red Wings, I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case because they they are going to have a tough schedule and they are going to have a bunch of guys, even if Franzén isn't going to the Olympics now, but they're going to have a bunch of guys in the Olympics. So Vancouver might be better off than Detroit,
maybe.
But
I think you got to look at Burroughs is going to have to step up his game.
Yeah, who are the guys that are going to make the difference for them while these players are out?
Yeah, I mean Burroughs and Kessler both scored last night, but you know what? Their offense, Vancouver's offense, even though they won the shootout against Dallas, it wasn't all that good.
Right,
and they got 25 shots in the game, so they're not generating as much pressure. And missing a guy like that, and again without Dimitri in the lineup, that's a lot of offense to take out of a lineup that doesn't have a lot of offense to begin with.
Sure.
And what does that also do to Henrik Sedin? Because like you mentioned, they are a pair.
Right.
They work together. You know, how much of his success is based off of his brother and, vice versa?
Absolutely.
I mean, it could turn out that, you might expect Henrik Sedin to do just fine without his brother. You would expect a guy who got, 80 points last year to be fine. Okay, they have an 80-point scorer in their lineup. But how much of that was off of his brother, and how quickly, and a lot of it was. Yeah. And so how quickly can the guys like Bernier and Burrows step in and develop some sort of chemistry, right, not necessarily a twin-like chemistry, but enough to at least get the Canucks through these next couple weeks.
Yeah, and both, you know, all these teams that have an injured player are hoping that they'll have some sort of a pleasant, difficult situation when the players come back. It's like, okay, well, we survived because XYZ mm-hmm. worked out well in their absence, but now that they're back, you know, what do we do? What are the changes that we have to make?
Well,
and that's a situation that you hope for when you have an injured situation. But it doesn't always work out that way.
No, because you have to get to that point. You have to still be alive and in the race. I mean, look at the Canadians.
Right.
You know, Markov went down the first game. They won their second game in Buffalo. It was a squeaker, but mm-hmm. they went on the road and they lost three games in a row last week. And their defense, and especially one of the games in Vancouver, that, you know, ironically, in a team that doesn't score much,
yeah.
Vancouver put seven goals behind Carey Price. That's you know, that shows.
Well, Sedin was still in the lineup then, right?
I think that's the game he got
hurt.
Yeah. So. Maybe he was still in the line for six of those goals. I don't remember exactly what point in the game he got hurt. But the thing is, you know, you can see the impact on Montreal's defense and overall game because, you know, Markov may be their best player, the best power play quarterback, a puck mover. So you lose a key player like that, it's very hard to replace.
Mm-hmm. What about somebody like Cole, who's more of, you know, the engine of the team? And you know, his points are there, but they're not the focal point of the drive. It's not like Stahl going down
right.
for Carolina, but you have a different type of player going down. Where he's kind of more of the team feeds off of his play, is it potentially easier to kind of replace that type of a player?
Yeah, well, you know what? Eric Cole came back last year, I guess around the trade deadline.
Yep.
So they got through much of the season without him. But the thing was, when he did come back, he really clicked again with Eric Stahl. Those two
right.
guys played a lot together.
Yep.
And I think there was something about them because those two guys tend to play the game almost the same speed. Cole didn't have that good a playoff, though.
Right.
I mean, he kind of slumped a little bit. So, you know, there's some suspicion about where his game really is. You know, if last year it was just kind of the adrenaline coming back to Carolina where he was, you know, he had his best years. You remember, he broke his neck a couple of years ago mm-hmm. against Pittsburgh. I think he was hit from behind. Was it Orpik, I think it was, hit him.
I don't recall.
But, you know, he hasn't really been the same player, but still, he is a big factor on a team. He should be a bigger factor. And again, having him for the whole season with Stahl probably bode well for the Hurricanes coming in. Losing him, I guess, opening night mm-hmm. is not easy.
Well, the thing about the Hurricanes, I think, is that a guy like Cole is, I do want to say, easily replaced in terms of the depth. I mean, if he's off the top line, you can stick Ray Whitney up there. And Whitney's, I believe, been their leading scorer for two of the last 3 years. So that's a positive. You know, Jussi Jokinen started to come into his own
yeah.
last year. Sergei Samsonov could be thrown up there. There are a lot of guys that they have that can fill that role. You know, if you look at, you know, Vancouver or Detroit, you know, who is the guy that steps in and how much does it affect the depth of their lines? I don't think in Carolina there is that problem. And I think when they do get Cole back, it's going to be like getting a player, you know, that almost like trading for the player that you didn't have for the start of the year. So, yeah, for them, I think it's probably easier to survive this stretch than it is going to be for Detroit or for Vancouver. I think Vancouver is probably in the worst situation. You look at Detroit, you could say, well, they don't have Franzen, who is a finisher.
Right.
And I think is probably the finisher on their team. As much as Datsyuk and Zetterberg can score, I think they're more playmakers. And I know Wes have mentioned Leno,
mm-hmm.
But I think he's also in that mold of being more of a playmaker than a finisher.
Sure.
I think Franzen is just pure finisher. So, but the Red Wings, if you look at that team to say, well, they don't have Franzen, but they still have Datsyuk and Zetterberg, you don't freak out. Say you go back to Vancouver. Sedin's, for the most part, their finisher, who fits in that role now. And I can't see someone stick out
right.
so obviously.
All right, so let's move on. This is one of those things that over time you're just going to have to see, and mm-hmm. hopefully the teams that are dealing with significant injuries can, you know, ride the tide until these players get back, or hopefully somebody steps up, and it's just one of those things that you just have to keep an eye on.
I think just, you know, the irony of, like, these are, like, fairly serious injuries, obviously, when they're talking about months for a lot of these players, but
exactly.
we haven't even really got into the point where players are starting to miss a game or two because of a pulled groin or this
mm-hmm.
and that, and that's really what I think is going to start being visible as the season gets a little deeper. Because, again, we're playing, you know, 3-4, 6-8, mm-hmm. and eight, you know, or whatever their schedules are. Teams are going through tough schedules
right.
because of – I mean, even yesterday, the Flyers had to play the Ducks had to play a 5 o'clock game at MSG when they played the night before in Philadelphia, you know.
Right.
It's not that much of a turnaround time, mm-hmm. even with 24 hours. They had 22 hours turnaround time, so it's not even that much. I think it's going to start catching up with people.
Yeah.
For sure.
If it hasn't already.
If it hasn't already, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch the Ducks-Rangers game, you want to give all the credit in the world to the Rangers because it's the way they've been
you
playing.
You certainly do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you do.
I certainly do. You know, but it's when you if you've watched their previous games, they mm-hmm. played exactly the same way, but it was a lot easier to take a team to task because you could tell that Anaheim was playing the second of back-to-backs.
You know what it was.
Go ahead. Okay.
I was going to say.
Oh, right, here's our moment. Wait, we should have our theme music now, shouldn't we? Right?
I know, because
Mr.
back.
Mr. Sean Avery back in the lineup.
And let me tell you something. I thought he made an impact because he got under their skin so much on Anisimov's goal yesterday, the power play goal.
Right,
Scott Niedermayer is behind the net going after Avery.
Right.
And where is the guy? He's alone in front of that, you know.
Exactly.
It's like, okay.
Exactly.
And you know,
and Sean was couldn't be faster in pointing that out to Niedermayer after the goal.
Well, you know what? It was very apparent because Niedermayer should know better than that. Let's face it. He's
played the game a couple times.
I think so. Yes.
So, all right. So let's move on here. I want to move over to Sidney Crosby and his. Yes, we've had our Sean Avery moment.
See, now I'm thinking of theme music for Sean Avery. What would we use?
Crosby made some statements with regards to the players' union and the potential for another lockout, which we experienced a handful of years ago, saying we don't want a lockout. I don't think anyone wants a lockout. It's not like we've got 6 months to get union affairs settled. We've got time. At the same time, there are decisions that have to be made. So taking a look at this and some of the other things that he said, obviously as a player, he's a member of the union, but what do we think the weight of somebody like Sidney Crosby making these kinds of statements says? I mean, does it help the union? Does it hurt the union?
It's an interesting question. I think the idea of getting a high-profile player at least to comment at this point is important because, let's face it, part of the problem in the Players Association going back years and years is they've been led by very strong leaders, Goodenow for the most part. I mean,
right.
Ted Sasson, a different issue. But heading into the lockout, they were rank and file. They would follow in lockstep whatever the union leadership would tell them without getting much involved and understanding what the issues are. I think in this situation now where you see this kind of upheaval and this coup d'etat really in the middle of the night kicking out Paul Kelly, who for the most part I think a lot of the players felt was the right man for the job at the right time. And, you know, the way he was undermined, I think, within the union, and, you know, there were forces against him from day one, obviously. They ended up undermining right. him and costing him his job. I think the players realize, you know what, we're going into another collective bargaining negotiation in another year. This CBA runs out September 15th, 2011, I believe.
Right.
It. Mm-hmm. So there's time, obviously, to get, you know, the house in order before, and it's critical because, you know, everybody thought that the union, the Players Association came out of the last lockout and lost. And in theory, maybe they did. There was a salary cap, which they didn't want. The players have actually done pretty well because,
sure. mm-hmm.
you know, by the nature of things, the owners and teams still basically drive up prices and things like that. But, you know, things have changed. The economy has changed. There are
right.
teams, it's, you know, no matter how much the league and Gary Bettman says everything's fine, it's wonderful, the sun is always rising in Florida and Phoenix and Nashville and Atlanta, it's not. And the players know that. They're, you know, whatever disinterest they have, they're playing in these places and they look up in the stands and they see half of them are empty. So
sure.
you understand you have a piece of the pie. You have to have the right leadership and the right negotiating skills going into the next negotiation. Otherwise, they're going to get killed. I mean, who knows, you know, without the right leadership, what if they end up losing the right to guaranteed contracts like the way they do in the NFL or something? I think that could be a danger. You know, that's something that obviously they wouldn't want. The league would love that.
Right.
But I think what Crosby is doing now, and he's putting a higher profile, and maybe you'll start hearing some of the other players, veterans and players with a greater status, at least, you know, signaling that we're more interested. And if it shows they're more interested, chances are their leaders, you know, on the ice, in the room, they'll maybe be leaders you know, to get other people involved. And if you have your 730 members of the Player Association paying attention to what is going on,
sure,
you cannot have these middle-of-the-night coups. And I think it's critical to get the union organized properly before they get into the next bargaining session.
Well, how important is it, though, to have them all on the same page? Because, you know, you could have somebody in the players' union right now that would be like, you know, hey, listen, Crosby, don't be making any of those comments, because if we're prepared to, you know, go through another lockout
but
situation.
But that was his comment. That was his comment. He said, I don't think anybody in their right mind, whether on the owner's side or the player side, regardless of how much you want to use the threat as leverage,
right,
I don't think anybody would want to see a lockout, because let's face it, the NHL was almost killed by the last one.
I was just going to say, another lockout would destroy the league.
Right.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But the question I have with Crosby throwing it out is, from a public standpoint, I think fans would look at that, knowing he is the face of the league, and say, oh, okay, they do care. How do I not side with the players? It is the owners that are the problem, whether they're, you know, running up the payroll through loopholes, they're raising ticket prices. Yeah, I'm getting screwed in the end. So from a public standpoint, for Crosby to speak out, yeah, that makes sense. Within the union, I don't know how much that holds weight. You know, he's the league's poster boy. The league has put him in that situation.
Okay.
So I don't know if my logic can be understood easily here. So how much can a union take if he's the league's poster boy? Do you kind of?
Yeah.
Okay. So my question is, how, you know, at what point are some of the guys who have been through the previous labor wars, because Crosby hasn't been through a lockout, you can't look at him and say he's gone through the same thing as, say, like Chris Pronger or Paul Kariya or Keith Tkachuk, who have been around for
sure,
the previous two, who have experienced this. And, you know, so where does his statement even hold weight within the union?
That's,
you
a
know,
good
what
question.
I think, though, it probably at this point, if you're looking at things moving forward, I think it's probably more important that Crosby's, Ovechkin, maybe the younger stars, raise their voices and not necessarily say, like, you know, we want to bow down to whatever the league does, but we have to get our union in a place that it makes sense.
Oh, because, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, but what, sure, I'm saying is, you know, you're mentioning guys like Brodeur and Pronger, and yes, these guys went through it, but again, these guys are towards the end of their career. Mm-hmm. And this collective bargaining agreement, the next one they're going to negotiate, is going to be for another 6 years. It's moving forward. These guys will not be around.
Right, they won't be a part of
it. Yeah. You know, for much of it anyway.
Right,
it may
right.
be a couple of years. So really,
sure,
their day has passed in that sense. It's really up to the next generation kind of pass the torch to them, get involved, and at least, you know, tell the players, look, we have to, you know, we don't have to devote our entire lives to union affairs, but we have to at least be cognizant of what's going on, mm-hmm, and who's making decisions.
And not let three guys run the,
right,
run the table.
And,
yeah,
and do whatever they want, because you know what? It's not necessarily in our best interest, and obviously it's not in anybody's best interest to have another shutdown of the league, mm-hmm, and go forward.
So maybe the main purpose here is just to make sure that they get their house in order, regardless of whether it's to head to the negotiation table, you know, with the league, or whether it's just to say, hey, let's make sure that we're at least aware of what's going on in our own world.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's critical, because here's the thing. You know, again, I don't know that these guys want to get necessarily involved deeply in the union, but the fact is, if they're willing to make statements, even from time to time, as the process moves forward in terms of selecting the next union boss, you're going to see questions brought to them at all, wherever they stop, especially in major markets. As it happened, Crosby made a statement Saturday because the Penguins were in Toronto. Obviously, mm-hmm, there's
right.
a lot of media there. But when he goes into places, and if the process is going forward over the next 6 months, whenever Crosby comes into a city, they're going to say, well, what do you think about the process today?
Exactly.
You know, Ovechkin the same. What do you think about the process today? An Eric Staal, a Patrick Kane or mm-hmm. Jonathan Toews. These players who are the young rising stars of the league, if they keep getting asked about things and their opinion at least is entered into the public record, so
right,
to speak,
right.
it's going to keep everybody honest, I think, to some extent. I think that's really what the players, what Crosby was trying to get at more than anything else.
Is there? Do you think there's too much of youth being a problem? I mean, you mentioned a guy like Patrick Kane. Patrick Kane's what, 19, 20? If I were 19 and 20, I'm not sure I would be well-versed on the depth of union issues to the point where I really would understand you know, X, Y, and Z that could affect that. So, I mean, is it maybe something where they got to look for more middle ground, not so much maybe the Crosbys, but more of the guys like, let's say, and I hate to use this as an example, but let's say like Kovalchuk. Someone who's been around,
right? But you could.
But you know, someone.
But anybody.
Someone who's seen a little bit more than some of the younger guys.
No, I understand what you're saying, but my point is that you know if you're saying that they're not that well versed in the issues, that's the whole point.
Well, they have to be.
When you have a meeting, you attend the meeting. You know, you have or you talk to your. They all have agents, and all the agents have a stake in what goes on as well. Yeah. So the question is, you talk to your agent, find out what does it mean to have this guy? What does it mean to have that guy? What does it mean that they're looking to negotiate or to try and get this? What does it mean to us? What is the potential? That's all I'm talking about. The players need to know if they get involved at least to that level. Yeah. It's not like they have to go be militant and demonstrate and carry picket lines or whatever it is, or get involved in negotiations. No, you leave that to professionals who you elect as your leadership. But
well, didn't they do that last time?
Well, I'd say odds are that these very same players could be very, you know, impressionable. And if you get somebody like a Pronger and say, hey, you don't really want to do this, you know, don't do X, Y, Z, because this is what's going to happen to you, and make it, you know, install some kind of fear tactic and say, you know, if you agree to what the owners are saying right now, you're not going to have this, you're not going to have that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, you're right. This is what I need to do. And I'm all for this now without even really understanding the true nature of what's going on.
Yeah. But I think if anything, you know, since the lockout was so recent, and even though a lot of these players, they joined the league after the lockout, I think, you know, they saw what having a very determined leader like Bob Goodenow gets them. I mean, you know, he was a militant leader, and he got a lot of concessions and gains for them in the 15 or so years he was the leader of that union. No question about it. He elevated their salaries. They did very well under Goodenow. Right. But there's a price to pay. It's like kind of like the housing market. Everybody did really well, and then like you know now you're you know you bought a house and you thought it was going up and up and up, and now it's worth nothing or it's worth half of what you thought it was.
Sure,
you have to have a practical approach to things at some point. I think you know the players. What Crosby is suggesting is just have a little more awareness and let's do things. Let's do it right, and you know let's work you know together basically. Because if this is a partnership and it's supposed to be, you have to at least go in with the belief you're going to work. You have somebody who is a strong advocate for what you want, but you also have somebody who is willing to reach a compromise rather than just be stubborn and go to the corner and pout.
That's
what ended up happening last time.
Yeah,
the union
exactly
said no hard salary cap, and then they locked them out. And then what happened? They got a hard salary cap.
And
they lost a year of their playing lives.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. All right, yet another item to put on our. We'll have to wait and see.
Isn't that always how it is?
It is, you know. But I mean,
we're only 2 weeks into the season.
Yeah, we're only 2 weeks, but it's relevant now based on Crosby's comments, you know, a lot of things can happen between now and September 2011. So we'll try to keep track of the you know each time something pops into the news and bring it to you right here on the Odd Man Rush. And we're going to move on to our next topic. I want to talk about another new organization, move, or relocation, or whatever the case may be for Quebec. The mayor, city mayor, met with Gary Bettman about a new NHL team, and have not had anyone since the Nordiques left for Colorado and their Stanley Cup right after. As a shame for them, but you know, certainly a lot of history with the NHL there. How realistic is this? And not just on its own merit, but I want to compare it to all the other relocation or new franchise situations going on with the NHL.
I had a thought before we got into this the studio here. I had a question for you guys. What do the Sabres, Penguins, Senators, Flames, and Oilers have in common? Okay, no one's going to have any clue. They were all teams in the late 90s that were always the ones mentioned about being relocated.
Okay.
My thinking is that relocation, talk of relocation in the NHL is like talk of cheating in baseball. It just is now part of the game. It's just going to be part of the game. With Quebec, I don't know. I don't know if it's something where they're going to be able to relocate. We had a discussion, Wes and I, on on Saturday, Hartford was a possible site for relocation, and they met with the mayor, I believe, and that fell through. So
he got arrested the next week, doesn't it?
So I mean,
they frown upon that sort of thing. I've heard.
Well, not in the NHL.
Right. I was definitely not speaking about the NHL.
I think that was his first step in passing the due diligence process.
Right. Exactly. You fraud? Oh, yeah. Hey,
come on in.
Come on board.
You're
club's
welcome.
Open.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm getting at is that, you know, with all this talk, I can understand where the NHL wants to have its options open, but it, you know, it's starting to almost get ridiculous to the point where, you know, someone says, hey, I want a team, I want to put a team here, I want to put a team there, but yet at the same time, the NHL comes back and says, well, we don't want to move any teams. We insist on keeping them there. My only guess is that they are doing some due diligence for when, I guess, maybe the economy grows, maybe and gets back to, you know, healthy status. Maybe are they going to start talking about expansion?
No,
I guess we can
all agree on that.
I think that's the real point. I think nobody, the word expansion is a dirty word now in hockey, because
without question,
it doesn't make any sense. Nobody's talking about expansion, and you know what? I think there's almost a consensus internally, at least, that the NHL expanded too fast and incorrectly, during the 90s during Bettman's term. But be that as it may, the reality is this: no matter how much the league and Bettman will always say we want to keep our franchise, that's a corporate line. That is something you don't veer. You cannot veer from that, no matter what happens. We want to keep healthy 30 healthy franchises in the 30 markets, and we want to make them grow. But everybody realizes that franchises are in trouble. Phoenix isn't working.
Yeah, like the Sabres, the Penguins, the Senators, the Flames, and the Oilers in the 90s.
But the difference is, you are looking in places that basically, that they had ownership issues, they had arena issues, but they had market entrenchment. Those are hockey markets. Buffalo is still a hockey market.
Yes.
Pittsburgh's still a hockey market. Edmonton's still a hockey market. Ottawa's still a hockey market. So when they were talking about fixing the situation and getting the right owners, the right building, that was legitimate. Yes, when you have a problem with a business, there are ways to fix it potentially. Mm-hmm. When you have a problem in a business that has no possibility of fixing, and that, quite honestly,
Phoenix
is one, Florida may be another, Atlanta may be another, Nashville, you know, I don't know how you'd rank those in terms of biggest disaster. Obviously, Phoenix would be number one, but those other places are not necessarily much better. So you're looking at you know, the realistic potential for relocation rather than contraction exists, and that's why some of these cities that had teams that have grown in the last 15 years in terms of demographics, in terms of population, in terms of economy in their market, now they seem perhaps better suited to be able to support a team, and realistically, they want to be in the mix when, you know, the talk gets a lot more serious about relocation.
Well, two things though, with in regards to the Senators, Flames, and Oilers, I believe back in the 90s, part of the issue was the Canadian dollar, that they were struggling because they just didn't have the exchange rate. They were paying their players.
That had a lot to do with it.
How is that going to solve a situation if you have no control over what the dollar is up there or down here? I mean, you could argue, was a problem. For teams that were in U.S. markets, you could say, well, they're only bringing in, you know, 80% of what we're bringing
in. Right,
okay,
but there's two things. First of all, there's the circumstances are different. Right now, the dollar is much stronger. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Teams, you know, there are ways to hedge against exchange rates in the future by teams purchasing dollars. I mean, I know the Expos used to do that when I used to cover baseball up there. The Expos would purchase their dollars, you know, when the Canadian dollar hit a high against the American dollar, they'd buy, you know, for 5 years, well, I don't know how much they invested, but whatever the number was, they would buy future funds and have the exchange rate kind of locked in. So that's one thing. The second thing is, you didn't have revenue sharing back then.
Right.
So you have an equalization, you have revenue. So there are different factors in terms of the business model that make it more realistic if you have the right structure in place. And the right structure, obviously, is an arena that holds 18,000-19,000 seats, that has corporate suites and everything you can sell.
Right.
That's the key to all these places.
Modern amenities.
Yeah.
Right, modern amenities. And that's the thing with Quebec. Listen, you mentioned the mayor of Quebec going to this meeting with Bettman. The other guy that was in the meeting was Marcel Aubut, who used to own the Nordiques and who sold a team for a hefty profit to Colorado, because ostensibly they would not build him a new building in Quebec at the time. That's the thing. And that is the criteria number one. They are now talking about announcing plans to build a new arena. It's a chicken and egg syndrome. If they build the, if they build the arena, will they get the team?
Exactly.
But I think they realize that they can actually do a lot better, have a lot better chance. And given the next year, there's so many teams in a state of flux that,
sure.
that this is what it's coming down to.
Right.
So I think the potential is there. I think the group that I hear involved, this guy Pierre-Carl Pelletot, who's the head of Quebec, or a very big multimedia company printing. They used to be printing, obviously, and platform. They were involved in trying to buy the Canadiens, and they have a regional television network. So there are synergies there that they look at.
Sure.
And if they can put together the kind of money and they get a commitment from the NHL that, yes, we'll look at you. You build this a brand new state-of-the-art 19,000-seat building. You have government head offices there. You can sell tickets. Yeah, I mean, I can see that being very realistic.
Kansas City was a possibility too. They built the arena. They don't have a team, but they keep being mentioned as one.
Well, sure, because they have a building. But
do they have an existing kind of guaranteed market?
That's the whole point. I mean, again, you know, you're looking at all these places. I mean, they're testing out new markets, and I understand you want to expand your footprint. They've done that.
Yeah.
It. But you know what? People look at these teams in a lot of these markets as a novelty for the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a consistently good team, it's like any other sport. I mean,
but that's
look, the Marlins can't draw people and they've won two World Series.
But that's the point I was making about those teams back in the 90s is that yes, they are in hockey markets, but remember the Penguins weren't drawing, they were drawn worse than some of these teams were when they,
because they had lousy teams.
Exactly. So what are those teams that you just mentioned have? They are all also lousy teams.
But
so is it a matter of, like, at what point does the league have to say, well, we have to let some of these teams work through their problems?
But when the teams are lousy, they don't have fans coming in.
And
in the markets that are traditional markets, they will support the team through some weak years if they see signs of improvement. And you know, you see that in Toronto, they've been supporting it for decades. But the thing is,
more on that later.
Yes, but Quebec is a rabid hockey market.
Mm-hmm.
They will sell out. You know, they get the Nordiques back there, or a team with a fleur-de-lis on the chest. They will sell out games, and they will have the revenue. Whereas Phoenix, you know, a team like Phoenix right now cannot afford much of a payroll. You know, and let's face it, because they don't have the revenue to support it. You have a team with payroll revenue and with the equalization and with a stronger dollar, and yes, they're going to spend the money and they'll get talent.
But then you also have the factor of moving teams from the U.S. to Canada. How does that?
Well,
I mean, let's face it. Bettman has turned it into it's very much a more of a U.S. league.
Okay, but the point is this: the whole point of that was to get a national TV contract.
Yeah.
Right.
And 15 years later, I cannot get Versus on DirecTV.
Yes, and they still don't. But if you go
that's
and move
my second mention.
Yes.
If you move a team to Quebec, though, how does that help you any to get a TV?
But it doesn't hurt you.
In the future.
It doesn't. Well, you won't. You won't. If you haven't got one by now, you're not getting it. You know, I mean,
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Okay.
Let's put it this way. There's enough teams in trouble that you can have it.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And Kansas City, and everyone will be happy, except for the places that the teams are moving from,
here's the other thing. If you could get the Rangers and the Los Angeles Kings to be in the Stanley Cup Finals a couple of times, you'd get all your ratings you need. You wouldn't need, like, the smaller markets. I mean,
I was going to say, I don't know how true that is, because, I mean, you had Pittsburgh and Detroit, and then people followed that.
Right, because Pittsburgh and Detroit, right?
If you had a traditional hockey market, you had the face of the league, and granted, Pittsburgh is also
It spikes the number. That's what you need. So.
Yeah.
You know what they renewed with NBC anyway for no money, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. You know,
the Winter Classic has brought them in some publicity.
Right.
I believe that's
absolutely
sure.
It's great.
Sure.
And how much money do they make off of it?
It gets publicity.
Comment.
How much publicity?
No,
and how much does that help for your national television?
No comment.
Yeah,
no comment.
You know, that's
it's a work in progress, Wes. You should know this.
C'est ça, en français.
You can tell us what that means
what?
Later. All right, so let's the very spirited debate. Very
See?
Well done.
We
well
don't
done.
Need to pre-record, right?
No,
it's because
no,
our
no.
headphones are working better.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Exactly. So let's get back to the written word now. Two books that are they both actually out or are they coming out?
Peter Pocklington's book
Peter
was released
book,
last
right?
week, and Fleury's book, Theo Fleury's book, is coming out, I believe, this week.
Right.
But there's been a lot of excerpts.
Playing with Fire.
Yeah,
Theo Fleury's book, talking about his career, but also
the dark
abuse.
Side
the abuse that he faced, and you know, it's like, I guess maybe once a year we hear about some sort of, whether it's a superstar of Fleury stature or maybe a lesser NHL player, but maybe once a year, if not a couple times a year, where we hear about some sort of abusive situation, going through the ranks of trying to...
Well, this situation, I mean, with Fleury's junior coach, Graham James, I mean, that was, a big scandal going back about 10, 12 mm-hmm. years when Sheldon Kennedy, former NHL player and a teammate of Fleury, basically disclosed that he was abused when he was playing for Graham's team. And, again, this comes down, this is an unfortunate element in society, and it can happen in a lot of ways, whether it's, with priests or whether it's with coaches. I mean, people in position of authorities that can
take advantage of.
Yeah, and look, and let's face it, Fleury was, had a troubled childhood.
Sure.
And he talks about that. I think his father was an alcoholic and his mother was a prescription pill user type of thing. They basically sent him off to play. He was from Manitoba, and they sent him off to play for the Calgary team. And I think it was the Calgary team. And Graham James was the coach there. And, he was under his wing, and basically he felt that he could, he was shamed. I mean, look, same thing Mackenzie Phillips a couple of weeks ago. It's a similar story.
Jeez.
Like, you can't discuss these things, or you're too scared. When a child is abused, that you're too scared to turn somebody in. And Fleury went through it. And the thing is this, there were always these rumors and whispers that, there was always a second player involved, according to Sheldon Kennedy. He never disclosed it was Fleury.
And Fleury never came out during the trials and everything.
There was always the assumption that it was Fleury, because Fleury and Kennedy are both little guys. And, it's like Graham James took advantage of the two smallest. Right, the two, pipsqueak. Both of them were 5'5", not big kids, that some juniors might be. Took advantage of them. And, when Fleury left the NHL, 6 years ago, and all the problems he had with the drinking and the drugs, presumably, and everybody kept talking about demons and demons and demons. Again, this was all the assumption.
The assumption
was always there.
Sure.
But until he came clean, and, this is maybe part of the healing process. Who knows? I can't comment on that. That's what Sheldon Kennedy was quoted as saying, that this is it's part of the healing process, mm-hmm. but you still have to go through it.
Yeah, it's going to get harder before it gets better.
Yeah, but you have to at least give him credit, I guess, for coming clean about it, because,
sure.
again, in these kinds of situations, they're never pleasant. It's never pleasant to think about or to discuss it openly, mm-hmm. but maybe it does help. Maybe it does alert, parents or a kid that, if this is happening, and who knows if it's not happening, at whatever level. It could be, any sport with kids that are mm-hmm. Under adult supervision. It could be teachers and students,
yeah.
too.
Oh, yeah. It's not limited to
sports
authorities. It happens everywhere, sure.
But it's a good wake-up call for parents who maybe don't take an active lives in their kids.
Yeah.
Lives. And
I mean, it's unfortunate. It's not surprising. I think a lot of people, when the first excerpt started hitting going public last week, I think everybody said, yeah, it's
kind of no surprise.
Yeah, kind of.
Right,
really,
right, exactly. So. Where it's only going to be a matter of time before, this finally comes out. And it's no coincidence that, his career is officially, done. The comeback bid failed,
it's a little coincidental that he made it back.
I have to say, I heard an interview with him last week on the radio, and I could swear that they were talking about having to rewrite the end to include this, this chapter, no pun intended, of him trying the comeback, because obviously the book was. I mean, it was probably off the printing press by the time mm-hmm. he was doing this, and to have the results that he did have. I mean, it was a pretty good tryout, and I was thinking, well, at the very least, maybe he'll get a minor league deal and get called up or whatnot. And there was another story I had read earlier during the comeback. It was talking about the Abbotsford team, their farm team,
right.
and how the city is kind of a mess. I guess there are gang wars that are going on. There's a lot of crime and whatnot. And the mayor, I believe, was talking about, he was saying he was hopeful that Fleury would get a minor league deal, that he would come and play there, because it would be a good message to the youth that were there to say, listen, we all have problems. We got to work through them. And, if you kind of put your mind to it, you can get through these tough times. So I have to say, I am a little bit disappointed that, hearing everything that's come out and
right.
obviously, you kind of have to say, well, it's a shame that he just it didn't work out for him, that he didn't, you know. But at the same time, I think with these revelations, you say the fact that he got a tryout and he excelled the way he did, it's got to close some door for him. You know, it's got to heal somehow.
I think that's absolutely it. I mean, you know, the cynical part of me, like when this book came out last week, I started thinking, well, that was really what the comeback was all about. Just basically, you know, kind of a little publicity stunt to get more interest.
Sure.
I don't think it was a publicity stunt.
Well, no, I'm not saying it was.
That's just saying that the cynical part of it is saying that's
not that I'm
about.
Ever cynical, really, but it's just like there was like, you know, something on my shoulder thinking like, but the thing is, you know, He did attempt to come back, and you know, I thought in that sense it might have been a stunt. He did have a very good training camp. You know, he scored four goals.
He was a last day cut.
He was a last day cut, but again, I think what you said for him and the comments he made at the end, like he was at peace with it, and he said because he went out on his own terms, and I think that's important because remember, he was run out of the league 6 years ago. His drinking and his drug problems. He got into fights in bars. I think really, he ran out of the league. At least, you know, he came back. Yes, I'm 40. Well, he's 41 years old now. Okay, my career, my playing days are over, but at least I went out showing that, you know, on my terms, like I can still play the game, maybe not at this level. And at 41, it's time to leave. But I left because it was time, not because they pushed.
Right.
So in that sense, I think, there was like another some closure in that sense, too. But as Kennedy said over the weekend, you know, it's great. You know, when you get, you know, you reveal this and you have a burden and some sort of sense of relief, he said, but then, and there's a lot of people around you, but you still have to go through the rest of your life. And
that's it. This overwhelming support that's around him right now in a couple of weeks is going to fade away and it's just going to be him again. And so, definitely he'll have to learn how to deal with that, you know, out of the spotlight when it's just him and his demons.
And I think that's another reason why I was, you know, hoping something would come out of it, whether it be a position with the team or just some sort of, you know, more active role with them.
There still might be.
Exactly. This may have been that last bit to say, okay, understood, not as a player, but I've tried to show that I am a fully functioning member of society.
Right, absolutely.
And I'm not, you know, a harm, and I've got a lot to give. You know, as far as helping, you know, other people improve in on this
Listen, and who's to say, like, he won't end up with the NHL doing kind of an ambassadorial thing, almost the way, like, Willie O'Ree does as an advocate for minority.
Sure, sure.
You know, he could be, I know Sheldon Kennedy actually has a group, a company in Toronto where they deal with abusive situations. They lecture and they provide material. And maybe Fleury can get involved with the league and going around and doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's good. It's good. It's good, I guess. I don't know if it's – I mean, you know, you hear people coming clean. Again, I bring back Mackenzie Phillips a little while ago. Maybe, you know, it's good at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's an awful situation. And, you know, I guess everybody has to deal with whoever goes through it has to deal with it in their own way. So you can't really, you know, I guess be cynical about it. If it's works for him, then good.
I don't want to, like, jump premature on this because I know it will become a topic later on this year. Do you think he's Hall of Fame worthy?
Fleury?
Yeah.
No.
No. Greg?
Jury's out.
Really? I mean, look.
I don't know.
Decent number. I mean,
He's another one of those guys that every year we're like, hey, listen, the numbers are really good, but.
But, I mean, well, but again, they're not. I don't think he has Hall of Fame. Because, you know, there's usually a cutoff, like 500 goals or whatever. I mean, I don't think he hit 500
he's
goals.
He's short of that.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Yeah, I was going to say that, but
we're not picking on you, Theo.
But you know, a very good player and, you know, exciting player at times, but.
Certainly.
Career broken
did
up.
Did well on the big stage when he had to.
Yeah, no question about it, but. I think there are a lot of players ahead of him. And, you know, at a certain point, you know, I mean, well, who knows, 10 years down the road. But look at Glenn Anderson. It took him 10 years to get the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, definitely not first round, especially with all the people that each year when we go over that are ahead of him and that still haven't gotten
in. And this year's class, I've been kind of keeping track. Like I said, I'm going to save that for another
we're,
weekend.
We're away,
but,
away from that. But.
Yeah, there are some pretty hefty names.
So is Matt Sundin a Hall of Famer?
We're saving that. We're saving that.
Yes. For the Hall of Fame week.
All right,
Hall of Fame week.
Let's move on to Peter Pocklington's book.
Peter Pocklington.
I'd trade him again.
Yes.
Speaking of the Gretzky situation. But much larger than that, and we had a really good conversation before that I kind of want to, you know, go over again. And Wes, you had the – I mean, I'm reading here some of the specifics, but why don't you go ahead and tell us about this deal that almost took place, that almost seems
it's
unbelievable
like a fantasy.
To imagine, And you can even add that own little bit of Toronto editorial you added.
Well, yes. My point is that if most of the people in the hockey world believe that Toronto is insufferable as it is as the center of the hockey universe, I'm trying to think what it would be like had they won 5 Stanley Cups in like 6 or 7 years. First of all, they would have won more, because the reality is this. Had they won the Stanley Cups,
they'd have been able to keep Gretzky.
Exactly. I mean, Gretzky would still be in Toronto, and Paul Coffey and Messier. And that would have killed the Rangers, you know.
I don't want to think about that.
Right, there you go.
But think of the repercussions of that, even, because if Gretzky stays in Toronto, Gretzky doesn't go to L.A. Are we even talking about Phoenix, Florida, Atlanta? Are we even talking about those teams?
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. You know, it's true. I mean, you know, it's funny how you think history could have changed by a little thing. Like,
well, this is hardly a little thing. I own Toronto. You own Edmonton. What do you say? I take my Toronto players and become the Edmonton Oilers, and you take your Edmonton Oilers and become the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah, that's
well,
huge.
It certainly would have given Toronto people another reason. Well, at this point, you know, that would have been a great thing. But I think, you know, the Harold Ballard era in Toronto is universally dismissed as a disaster. And it was. I mean, the way he ran the team, the scandals went on inside. There was a lot of problems in his era. He made a lot of money off the team, presumably, but he was in financial trouble in 1980, I believe, when this thing came by. And Peter Pocklington was a cowboy mentality type of entrepreneur from Western Canada. You know, he bought Wayne Gretzky from Nelson Scalbini, who was another one of these, like, mercurial entrepreneurs. I was telling you the story about the Alouettes when Scalbini bought half the NFL and tanked with that team. But these guys had a mentality of, like, you know, we're making deals that seem, you know, outlandish and risky now, but we see the big picture. And Pocklington said, I would have, you know, I did the numbers, I would have made a fortune. And he would have made a fortune with those guys. It would have cost him $50 million in 1980, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, extrapolate, I don't know what that's worth today, but it's probably worth at least double, if not 2.5-3 times what it worth then. I mean, that's a lot of money to put out. But
how much would have been making it?
Exactly.
In the meantime?
I mean, it would have been incredible. It's an amazing story when you think about it.
Yeah.
It would have been,
to say the least.
Basically, you're basically trading entire roster, and you know, you'd have the Oilers, and Gretzky and his company would be Toronto Maple Leafs, and Toronto had a lousy team in those. They were going to. I mean, the Oilers at that point had not actually hit their stride yet. They were, I think, first year in the league. Gretzky had already won or tied for the scoring championship with Dion his first year, but you're talking about these guys, like 20-year-old kids. Yeah, they were growing, and you know, within a couple of years, they would have been absolutely amazing. So,
but I guess another question, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Would those guys? You'd like to think it would have been exactly like it was in Edmonton, but would the fans have harped on them to no end?
They won
in Edmonton. They won in that environment. But if they had taken that whole team, do you know what I mean, the makeup of that team
and during that time, I think they were pretty unflappable.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they were so good that the fans in Toronto. The difference between Toronto fans and Montreal fans is. Toronto will give the absolute benefit of the doubt, even the media, I think, to some extent. Mm-hmm. They love the team, everything possible to keep the team on like, you know, a top shelf type of thing. Whereas Montreal, you know, the guy made a bad pass, you know,
they'll burn you at the stake after the game.
Right. Yeah. So the thing is, I mean, that kind of team in Toronto, you know, I don't know.
I hate to use the analogy, but it would be like the Oprah's favorite thing where the crowd goes. You guys are lost on that, but anyway.
What?
it just always sticks out in my head when there's something that is just so people get so ecstatic over. You know, Oprah's favorite things where she gives away the cars and stuff. That I could see all of Toronto being just in a constant joyous riot over.
You think they'd be giving away Maple Leaf cars?
No. I'm just saying, like, the emotions pouring over. I mean, it would be like if they had that many,
especially in a row like that.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting point you made. I didn't think of it from that point of view, but had they would have stayed together, and yeah, there would have been no Southern expansion because
maybe there would have been, but not to the extent that there was.
Or would it have been successful?
Yeah.
Well, without Gretzky going
right
to
because
LA.
That was the trigger. Gretzky going to Los Angeles in 88.
Yeah.
Really, within a couple of years, you ended up with San Jose. You ended up with, I mean, the whole Southern expansion.
But you could also wonder, too, then, would Edmonton have survived if they were so terrible for so long?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
That's a fair question, but
yep. Given the market problems that they had in the 90s, and even,
well, they didn't have problems in the 90s, but again, they would have had Ballard own the team.
Yeah, right. That's what I mean.
No, I mean, because he was you know,
it's not Toronto.
No, it's not Toronto, and he wouldn't have made the kind of money. And you know, Edmonton struggled. That's the reason, you know, it got to the point where the players started making money, they couldn't keep him anymore. So yeah, maybe that franchise would have been killed, but you know what?
Would it have rubbed off on the rivals?
Yeah.
Would Calgary have been as, you know, would it, the desire to match and beat their rivals?
Well, it's
to
still
the north.
They're still playing the Edmonton Oilers. It's just different players. I mean, if they decide to make trades right now and traded, like, let's say 7 or 8 players, would Calgary hate Edmonton less? No, they'd hate them just as much.
Not that there's not the hatred, but you know how it's always you play up to your opponent's level or you play down to it, and the fact that they were having to play a dynasty very frequently,
there was a very
do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, there's
a very
tough
Calgary level. Have won a cup in 88 because they've, you know, to get to that point, obviously they had to compete with Edmonton,
right?
But
they had
a dynasty,
but they also had some good players.
Obviously. You know, but, you know,
if they didn't have to play Edmonton, they'd have to play Winnipeg.
We could play what ifs, you know.
I want a time machine. I want to go back and see what the league is going to be like with such a wacky deal. But
well, when you make that possible, you let me know, and and we'll make it a topic on another podcast.
But the time machine?
That'll be our off-season project for next summer.
We'll work on a time machine.
The scene in Napoleon Dynamite.
All right. running a little long here, so let's move on to our final topic, Brendan Shanahan. And the Devils kind of cutting ties in a non-unique way with just before the start of the season. They let Shanahan go to make some extra some money under the salary cap, and Shanny did not or refused to go down to the minors, so the Devils were basically off the hook.
They terminated his contract.
Right.
Which, according to general manager Lou Lamoriello, is under the rules, and that's all he will say.
Right.
It's within the rules. And that's what it is. I mean, they brought him back late. I mean, Shanahan didn't...
Without repercussions.
Yeah, Shanahan didn't have a deal in place... and I guess this wasn't this might have been a tryout, you know, a conditional contract. You make the team, we're going to pay you $1 million for a year. Shanahan, I don't think, is going anywhere. I think this really is the end of his career, because let's face it, he didn't have that many options last year. He ended up with Devils. I think he joined midseason. It was pretty late. He didn't join he joined somewhere December, January. And, you know, his thing now is he's at the point where in his life with his family, he didn't want to move. I think St. Louis offered him a lot of money last year, but he didn't want to go back. You know, he's living in New York, and New Jersey was fine, and he's not going to find a place with the Rangers unless the Islanders can find a place for him. I think basically he's done, because I don't see him wanting to go anywhere else. And the other issue is, does anybody have room for a player? And
I can think of one team, Detroit. I know he doesn't necessarily want to move, but could we possibly see something like Timo Solani did a couple
waited,
years back?
Right. If he waited, where he wouldn't have to move his family, he would just go and kind of finish out the second half or the last, you know, legs of the season with Detroit.
But here's
or any team like that just needs someone to fill in and, you know, minute thing.
But that's really the issue, because the reason the Devils didn't keep him is because he wasn't good enough to take a spot in the first three line. He was basically going to be a fourth line player.
And didn't want to do that basically again for most of last year.
But not so much even that he doesn't want to do, because I think players, when they get to be at the end of their career, they tend to be more accepting of different roles and you know, just to be able to stay on. I think the idea is that if he's not on the team, it's because they're looking and say he probably doesn't have anything left. And I think that's really the issue. You know, you can say Detroit, theoretically, they're missing players. But again, where is he going to fit in? Does he help a team as a fourth-line player?
If you're in Detroit and have a shot at the Cup every year, I don't see why not.
Do you think he helps the team right now as a 40-year-old? That's what I'm saying. I don't think he – you know, he is I'd say he's a smart player. I don't know.
Chelios and McCarty came back for peanuts, and, you know, they got – another shot at the Cup. I mean, that's what I think it gets to at this point. Maybe you don't get the money. You're not going to be a first-line player. You might have to play the fourth line every third game, and that's all you're going to get. You might get 5 minutes of ice time a night, but you have a shot at a Cup. I mean, that's what it could come down to.
But I don't think the issue right now is Shanahan Shanahan's desire to be somewhere. I think it's the issue is going to be more, is there a team that sees him as an asset anymore? You know, and is he really an asset to anybody anymore? And that's, I think that's the message that New Jersey was sending more than anything else. Mm-hmm. The fact is, look, great player, great career, yeah. Future Hall of Famer for sure, probably first ballot guy type of thing.
I thought we were not talking Hall of Fame stuff here.
Okay.
and we don't even know if he's on this year's list yet. So,
but you know, the thing is, no, he can't be. He's got to be.
He can't be. Yeah.
You have to officially retire in the 3 years. But the thing is. Is he an asset to any team anymore? And I think that's the way teams are looking around. I mean, the game is so fast.
Well, asset in the sense of, you know, veteran leadership. Why did the Sharks bring back Claude Lemieux? It wasn't to have him, you know,
And what good did that do them?
Well, that's the Sharks.
That's
the Sharks, though.
But what good did he do them as a player?
That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's not necessarily on the ice. Maybe it's more of a locker room presence. Like you
Detroit
mentioned.
Detroit doesn't need that.
No, not Detroit. But, I mean, he is a, you know, probably... If he played on the fourth line, you'd probably still find room to get him out there on a power play.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a team
on a second unit,
yeah. Right? If you're a team that you know maybe is struggling in that heading into the playoffs, and you're just looking for a guy that can maybe you know just keep hitting those one timer pills, then yeah, maybe you take that flyer
and
at
you
him.
Think, no but that's again, that's assuming that he's still. Is good enough to do that.
And yeah, that's why I don't think it's something that we see a signing or anything within the next couple months. I think it's something that we wait and see. I mean, you know, trade deadline time, maybe when players start, you know, the prices start going up, they see him and they say, well, maybe, you know, can you do this for
right, but
two
the question
months?
Is based on everything that's happened the last few weeks or even the last month or two, is this something where he's starting to say, all right, you know what? It's time for me. You know, I need to just kind of go out. But is he going to have some sort of a not on my own terms situation for himself
where
he hangs around to say, you know what, somebody just pick me up. I want to go out so that at the end of the year I can say I'm retiring. Not I wasn't wanted by the New Jersey Devils because, A, I cost too much money, and, B, I didn't have enough left in the tank.
But that's his choice if he wants to kind of hold on to that.
Of course it is.
But, you know, what it comes down to, again, he hangs around till January. 41-year-old guy, not playing half a season. You know, he was able to contribute to some extent last year after sitting. But, again, it's harder and harder the older you get to sit out that long and get
without playing.
Solani and Niedermeyer couldn't do it when they came back 2 years ago, right?
I mean, Solani had a good season when he came back.
Yeah, you know what?
But he's done better being back for an entire year.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference is, though, he's 39, right? They made a big deal of that. He's 39, still skates very, very well, and still has a great shot. Shanahan's shot is probably his shot still is pretty good, but yeah, he was never a great skater to begin with, and now his legs
all about smarts.
Are done.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
You know, so again, we'll see, but it was interesting to me that, you know, Lamoriello's comment, just the terseness of it, you know, just like, you know, it's within the rules, that's all I'm going to say. And, you know, so whatever it is. Yeah, I know they released a statement. You were mentioning this before. You know, it was blah, 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 et cetera. It was all happy.
I'll have to find the statement.
But again, this statement was released by the Devils.
Yes.
Which he didn't comment on his own. So whatever it is.
Well, but he didn't. Did he comment?
You know, okay, you got to go away. We're not giving you $1 million. You know, whatever. Let's keep everything quiet. You know, who knows? I mean, you know, deals are made. You know, keep it quiet. Yeah.
So... All right, well, you know what I think we should do, and I want you guys to follow me on this. I think we should stay tuned in case something happens and then revisit that topic later so we can report on it.
Okay,
let's do that.
I'll keep track of Sean Avery.
Let's do that. Oh, there we go. We did, let's face it, you know, as we're wrapping up here.
Yes.
Sean Avery mentions.
Yep.
We had DirecTV
complaint.
That is against
that
versus.
That is a story that we will keep following.
Yes, I refuse to say versus. DirecTV against versus. And we even had some mamas and the papas chat with Mackenzie Phillips. So hopefully that will not be a recurring topic. But
no.
Many others to come, I am sure. So I want to thank everybody for listening. For Aaron Brown and Wes Goldstein, this is Greg Simlucas saying see you next week.